It's one of those days. Steve Dale's Other World on WGN. And I am honored to have this guy on the telephone with us again, this guy, Dr. Peter Hotez, Dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, co-director of the Center for Vaccine Development at Texas Children's Hospital. Dr. Hotez, thank you so much for joining us on WGN.
Oh, thanks so much for having me this afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And 312-981-7200, you can call. You could text your questions as well. I think this is what where I'm going to start. It's with the questions that I'm getting from folks. The Delta variant, we've heard so much about, and there have been reports in the news that the vaccines we currently have may do a good job, but not a great job. And we should be concerned about this variant, even if you are vaccinated. What's true? What's not true?
Well, we'll know better as we see what happens as the Delta virus accelerates, because now it's about 20% of the virus isolates in the U.S., and in Missouri, it's around 29%, almost 30%. So it's getting up there. It looks as though the two doses of either the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine or Moderna vaccine hold up quite well, so that even if you happen to get breakthrough COVID, you're not getting sick. So I think people should feel pretty comfortable if you've been fully vaccinated with those two doses of the vaccine. If you've only gotten a single dose of the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine, you're still somewhat more susceptible, so you need to get that second immunization. And if you're unvaccinated at this point, there's a good likelihood you may get COVID from that Delta variant.
What about the Janssen vaccine? Did you leave that out on purpose, or?
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to ask me that. So the answer is we don't have the data. We've been pushing on CDC and FDA to come up with guidance on what to do if you've gotten the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's likely that there's some protection, but it may be similar to the single-dose mRNA vaccines. And on that basis, some would say get a booster shot with either a second dose of the J&J vaccine or one of the mRNA vaccines. The problem is we just haven't received that guidance coming down from CDC and FDA yet. Hopefully it'll be forthcoming.
I believe what you just said is somewhat newsworthy and somewhat worrisome.
What's somewhat worrisome?
What you just said, I think, because so many people have gotten, of course, the Janssen vaccine. And you're saying, well, yeah, Now they need something else, maybe in addition to that. I've not heard that before.
Yeah, we just don't have the data one way or the other. And so I know the J&J with the FDA and CDC are working hard to come up with some definitive answers. And so a lot of the questions I'm getting now by email or calls is, hey, what should I do? Should I get the second dose? And you know, unfortunately, we just don't have that evidence yet. And so hopefully this will be coming very soon.
All right. What about the need for an update, a booster, even if you've had either the Moderna vaccine or the Pfizer vaccine? Is it going to be, do we know yet, like the flu shot that you get every year? Is this going to be every 6 months? Is it going to be every year? Are they going to be changing what's in the vaccine based on what variants are out there?
Yeah, you're asking all the good questions. Here's what I think. It's sort of an intermediate answer, and that is that I think it's likely that later on this summer we may get some recommendations if you've gotten the two doses of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine to get a third immunization. And what that will do is give you more resilience, more robust protection against any variants that come along. It looks as though right now the two doses are good for the Delta variant, but I wouldn't be surprised if the recommendation of the third dose comes along later this summer. That's point one. Point two, then what's always followed is the next question. Okay, Dr. Hotez, does that mean we're going to need a booster every year like flu, like you just asked? And on that one, I think the scientific community is more divided. I personally don't think that's going to be necessary. I think with that third immunization, we'll have pretty long-lasting protection for quite a while. But we'll see what kind of guidance comes down.
All right. So I'll be the fly in the ointment, so to speak, here. to, all right, let's say what you say.
I mean, you can see that I'm not trying to be cute. I'm not trying to thread the needle here. What I'm trying to do is, you know, I have personal opinions on what I would recommend, but I'm also reluctant to get too far over my skis and put the CDC or FDA in a bind that says something that that ultimately they won't agree with. And so it gets to be a sort of a difficult position.
Well, and this is your expertise. So let's say country of choice, it doesn't matter, has a lot of COVID because they're not vaccinating their citizens yet. And there is a bigger change than what the Delta variant is that affects the spike protein. Is that not likely to happen? Am I being too cynical?
Well, you know, we are seeing new variants evolve. The only interesting news is when you see the variants evolve, it's not like they're mutations willy-nilly. It looks as though we're seeing a convergence around the same four or five amino acids in the spike protein. So that potentially says to me that we won't necessarily need to make new vaccines in perpetuity, that the existing vaccines that we have, provided we get really high levels a virus neutralizing antibody to those vaccines, will be give us broad enough protection so we may not need different vaccines down the line. Again, new pathogen, we're always learning new things, but I think that's likely to shape up. I think the more common question I'm getting asked is, we have a lot of expats who, either because they're working for global companies and working overseas, they don't have access to the Moderna or Pfizer vaccines. They're getting Chinese vaccines or Russian vaccines. Now they're in the U.S. What should they do? Should they now get the mRNA vaccines? And that's now being looked at very carefully as well in order to give some guidance. So there's going to be a lot. You know, what happened was we got so many vaccines out there, including our vaccine, and, you know, that now we're kind of playing catch up in terms of making recommendations about mixing and matching.
All right. I know folks want to talk to you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can call. You can text Dr. Hotez. And you will have an opportunity to talk with this great man. Honored to have this man on the phone once again with us. I mean, we've had the top, you know, the doctor in charge of the Moderna trial. We've had Dr. Anthony Fauci. I couldn't think of his name. We've had him on the show. And here he is for the second time, Dr. Peter Hotez, Dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston and co-director of the Center for Vaccine Development at Texas Children's Hospital. Texas Children's Hospital. Yeah, I want to talk about children because a question that we have here via text several different times over, concerns about children, Dr. Hotez, and myocarditis, I believe is what they're asking about, inflammation of the heart muscles, pericarditis, inflammation of the lining around the heart. Is it a real concern for children? If so, about how old are these kids? Do you vaccinate? Don't you vaccinate? Does it depend on the health of the kids? I know you're not the personal doctor for every child there is in America, but what is your advice?
Well, I think it's important to remember right now that none of the vaccines have been released for emergency use for kids under the age of 12. So we're talking primarily about the 12 to 17-year-olds and young adults.
Right.
And I think before you answer about the myocarditis rates from the vaccination, it's important to keep in mind myocarditis from the actual virus, from the SARS coronavirus. So a study coming out of the University of Michigan, for instance, found that among student athletes at the University of Michigan and a consortium of other universities, about 2 to 3%, a little over 2% of those individuals with COVID had evidence of myocarditis. So myocarditis appears to be a pretty common complication of the actual virus, number one. So, and that's why when you hear about rare myocarditis from the vaccination, it's important to keep that in perspective. Right now, to me, it looks like the risk of myocarditis after getting COVID far exceeds that from getting the vaccine, and so that, which seems to be a pretty rare event. So, of the 20 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines given to young people, it's been about 300 cases of myocarditis. That's about 1 in 70,000. So, still quite a rare complication. Number one, and number two, overwhelmingly, most of those cases were extremely mild and resolved within a couple of days. So, again, all important things to keep in mind, given the risk of your adolescent child or if you're a young adult to the actual virus.
So several questions like this. One is, should I be getting a third shot if I'm immune compromised due to chemotherapy? Another question is, should I be getting a shot if I'm immune compromised due to chemotherapy? I imagine those are questions you ask your physician.
Yeah, absolutely. This comes up a lot. And, you know, it really depends on the type of immunosuppressive therapy you're on in terms of your risk. There has been some study around solid organ transplantation and other types of people who are on immunosuppressive therapy showing that a single dose of the vaccine does not give you very high levels of virus neutralizing antibody often. And that's not a true marker of protection, but it gives us a hint of what's going on. And it's clear that people, if you get the second dose, you do much better. And now there's at least one study looking at a third immunization for those immunocompromised individuals who are on immunosuppressive therapy. So that might be a way in which the guidance may change over time.
Yeah, I believe that probably is what the listener is referring to. Another listener wants to know, I know of someone who experienced severe allergic reactions within 20 minutes of getting the Pfizer vaccine. What do you recommend to stay safe? Is there a preventive for that?
Yeah, it really depends on the specifics for what actually happened and whether you have demonstrated allergy to the vaccine. What I would recommend is that you see a known established allergist, whether it's a pediatric allergist or an adult allergist, who can really look at the events that would happen and give you a more informed opinion. Because sometimes what people say was a severe allergic reaction was really not. And, you know, it depends if we're really talking about true anaphylaxis and drop in blood pressure, requiring resuscitation or something else. And that's why for these kinds of call-in shows, I think it's better that you really consult your allergist or get referred to an allergist to get a really informed decision about what your risks are.
Here's a great text, which says a lot. I'll let you comment on it. I could not go in for my breast exam and was diagnosed with breast cancer again, but might have been diagnosed earlier for sure had I been able to go in. It's because of COVID that I wasn't. I think there's an important point there because there are people that say, okay, hospitalizations are going up in certain places here and there around the country. But with that come hospitals saying, okay, we now aren't able to do surgeries that are not mandated surgeries. We're not able to see everyone for their colon cancer or breast cancer screenings. This makes a difference beyond COVID-19, doesn't it?
Yeah, and hopefully those days are over where we're getting hospitals that are so overwhelmed by COVID cases that they can't manage to do other things. And hopefully we won't see that again now that a higher percentage of the country is vaccinated. Although I am a little worried now, we're starting to see cases go back up in Missouri and Arkansas and maybe Oklahoma. But hopefully that people will be able to maintain medical care. The other thing that's happened over the last year and a half, I don't know if you've been following this, but we've seen a big decline in routine childhood immunizations because parents were reluctant to bring their kids into the pediatrician or the pediatrician was unable to see kids. And hopefully that will bounce back because I'm really worried about that staying down.
Yeah, I understand. Which COVID vaccine is the safest for those, this is another texter, who cannot get the regular flu shot due to an allergic reaction?
Again, you need to really know the details of what, because there's different types of flu shots and there might be different reasons for allergy. I mean, one of the more common causes of flu allergy is due to egg allergy because some of the influenza vaccines are made in eggs. And if that's the case, then you should still be able to get your COVID vaccinations. But again, if you've had a severe allergic reaction to a previous vaccination, my recommendation is you consult with your allergist or you should have an allergist in order to get some details on what you can and can't do.
We only have a couple minutes here, but this is a great question. Heard a TV report this morning that the World Health Organization is still recommending social distancing and mask wearing because of the new variant being so highly contagious, even if you are vaccinated. Is that true?
Yeah, I haven't seen that from the WHO. Currently in the U.S., our CDC guidance is saying if you're fully vaccinated, you do not need, certainly when you're outdoors, you'll need to wear a mask. And in a lot of indoor settings, you wouldn't need it as well. The one exception might be if you're immunocompromised and got vaccinated, you may want to think about that. Or if you're bringing little kids into really crowded areas, you may want to think about that. But otherwise, unless it's some super crowded event, and for instance, I'm not wearing a mask now. Let me just give you an example. I'm going. My youngest son and his girlfriend want to have dinner with us. We're going to go to a restaurant tonight. So, mm-hmm. And we're going to go. I'm not planning on wearing a mask inside the restaurant.
Mm. So at this point in time, if you have COVID, is it mostly your fault? Are at least deaths from this coronavirus preventable?
They are most of the time. So overwhelmingly right now, the CDC is reporting the overwhelming people who are losing their lives from COVID are unvaccinated individuals. And I just can't stress enough the importance of getting a vaccine if you're eligible to get vaccinated. These vaccines are safe. They have tremendous performance features in terms of protecting, saving your lives and reducing virus transmission. And now with this Delta variant, my worry is even if you've been lucky so far, and if you haven't been vaccinated or haven't been infected and recovered, you've been lucky so far, your luck's about to run out because of this Delta variant. So get vaccinated. And we have to get her over this myth that if you're a young, healthy adult and go to the gym every day, you don't need a vaccine. You absolutely do. It's great taking care of yourself and having a good diet and going to the gym, but it's not a substitute for virus neutralizing antibodies. Get your vaccination.
All right. Well put. Thank you for all the service that you have been providing and all the information that you and others have been providing. Pleasure to talk to you again, Dr. Hotez.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for all your good work getting the word out.
Thank you.